All right, man, it's so good to be here today. Iconic place in Jacksonville, the Desert Rider. Uncle Larry is taking good care of us today, and I think we have a great guest. Clearly, I think a lot of people are going to want to hear about this conversation, all the great things happening in Jacksonville. And I would just say it's pretty cool. All the guests we have on, it always gets to how much they love Jacksonville and why, whether they're from here or whether they move here. That's been the favorite part for me for these podcasts. And, our guest today is, I believe, one of the most effective people in Jacksonville right now, making a difference. And, we know each other really well through a lot of different, pathways, and I'm pretty excited about the conversation today. A three-time breast cancer survivor, a mom, somebody who loves fitness, a marathoner, cares so much about the community, decided to run for office, and now is the 9th mayor of the consolidated city of Jacksonville, 45th mayor of Jacksonville. And Mayor, it's so good to have you on Speakeasy. This has been a long time coming, and I'm looking forward to the conversation.
I am too.
Yeah, it's going to be really, really good. And I think maybe you saw the podcast where we had Tim on.
You think I did? Yeah, I did. I held my breath
the whole time.
What's he going to say? You never know with Tim.
It was so entertaining. And he's just such a good guy.
Yeah.
Just easy to talk to and full of like tremendous insights.
Yeah.
Like helpful information.
Full of a lot of things. Yeah. No, he is. He's fantastic. I'm glad you guys had a chance to talk.
Yeah.
It's really about the people in Jacksonville that everybody knows, but they don't know the story behind those people. And that's what we want to talk about today. I'm sure we'll get into a lot of other things, but I think most importantly, people want to know what it was like for you when you were growing up in Jacksonville, fifth generation.
Yeah. Well, my great, great grandparents came here just after the Great Fire. In fact, I know you asked for me to bring pictures, so I'll show you a picture of my great-great-grandparents when they first got to Jacksonville.
And where were they from?
They were from Lebanon.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, they were from Lebanon. And they came here.
And so who's who in the picture?
Oh, this is my great-great-grandfather. This is my great-grandfather, my great-grandmother. And these are, I guess, various sisters and brothers, I suppose. This must be his mother. I know there's some siblings in there.
Yeah.
Do you know around what time
I didn't
that
know
was?
These people personally.
Yeah, right. I don't think
Been passed down over the generations. What's that?
What time, about what year that was?
That was about 1905.
Wow.
It was about 1905. So really right after the Great Fire, Jacksonville had a big influx of folks who came here. Yeah. And there were a lot of people. As you know, we have one of the largest populations from the Middle East of any city in the country.
And I'm not sure most Jacksonville knows that.
Well, that's true.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of Middle Eastern people here, and a lot of them came right after the Great Fire.
And we're sitting in Uncle Larry's.
Well, that's it. I mean, Uncle Larry has been, we've always had family members in the restaurant business. Mm-hmm. Everybody owned a store. Everybody lived down here in the East Side or Springfield. And you lived in the same areas and everybody had a store or a restaurant, and no different with my family.
It's awesome.
We had right down the street from here, my great grandfather and my grandfather and Uncle Larry all together had the Roosevelt Grill.
Oh yeah.
Which Hank Aaron used to hang out there.
Wow.
It was amazing how Jacksonville was back in the day, but that was one of the memories that was always passed down. And that's why I love this place. I could probably eat here three times a week.
Well, I was going to say, not that he needs us to plug this, because this place stays busy, but this food is amazing.
It's amazing.
And you've got the Donna special. Is that what we're eating as well?
This is Donna's fave.
Okay.
Yeah, this is the sandwich version of Donna's fave.
And it is good.
The salad version of Donna's fave. Yeah, it's just... it's actually my Aunt Donna's favorite, but I have adopted it. So when I come in and people go, "Oh, Donna's favorite, is that you, Mayor?" I'm like, "Of course." We have three Donnas in the family. But I was named after my dad, who was Donald. But anyway, we're eating Donna's faves today, and they're good, aren't they?
They are really, really good.
And obviously because we're not.
We got these cookies that we have to get into at some point.
Yeah.
We are definitely off the regime because we're going to try a little bit of the cookies.
If you don't eat these cookies, I'm telling you, they're like, they are.
What flavor?
There's oatmeal, I think, and there's also chocolate chip, but I'm not sure if there's going to be. I'm not sure if there's chocolate chip left.
I'm going to get in this oatmeal.
It's so ridiculous. But they go really fast. I'm shocked there were any left today when we came in.
So when you were growing up, tell us what your house was like. What I know it was full of a community that were hard workers, business owners, but what was your house like?
Well, my dad was a lawyer and an opera singer. So when I was a kid, I would be dragged to every opera in the world that you could possibly imagine. My dad was a runner up at the Met in New York, had a gorgeous tenor voice. Uncle Larry also has a great voice. I did not, unfortunately,
you didn't inherit that.
No, I did not inherit that level of talent. But I grew up in a house full of music, and, it's so funny because, you know, all my friends are listening to rock music, and I could quote you probably every opera that ever existed. Wow. Really cool when you're a teenager.
Yeah. Is that something you still listen to today?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. In fact, Uncle Larry just unloaded for me about 30 boxes of my father's very extensive album collection of operas.
How cool
he has
is that?
Enrique Caruso. If you don't know opera, that wouldn't impress you, but he was probably the most famous opera singer of all time. And I have a lot of those things at home now that I don't know what I'm going to do with them, but I could never bring myself to part with them.
Yeah.
That my dad just loved.
And brothers, sisters, did you have siblings?
Yep. Two sisters.
Okay.
One, an exquisite ballet dancer. The other one, a classical guitarist. Are you starting to get
what
the idea?
What in the world?
A lot of talent in my family that did not transfer down to.
I don't know.
I mean, I think you're doing okay.
Yeah.
You're going to be all right.
You did such a great job in front of the camera for years and years and years.
Well, you know.
That takes a special talent.
I will say that I think all of us have a love for, in some form or fashion, words, music. Mm-hmm. I love to write. That's always been my love. And from the time I was in fifth grade, I knew I wanted to be a writer. And so I've been a writer my whole life, which is really what led me to broadcasting. Only because it seemed to be the great business opportunity at the time, right? Women were just coming into broadcasting in a big way. And that's how I got there. But honestly, I think that all comes from my mom and dad. My mother is just a voracious reader.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was with the beautiful voice. So,
middle school, high school, where did you attend?
Yeah, I went to San Jose Catholic for grade school, then went to high school at BK. Go Big Red.
Yeah.
And loved every minute of it. I was one of those kids that was just, I mean, I was the one on the stage sobbing when I graduated from high school because I didn't want to leave.
Yeah.
But I had just an idyllic, you know, youth, honestly, aside from the fact that my dad was sick. My dad was sick most of the time that I was growing up. And when he was in his late 30s, he got really bad kidney disease. Was a result of something that happened when he was young.
Mm.
We actually ended up having a transplant when I was 18, and that kept him alive for about another 10 years. But he died very young.
Wow.
Died very young, and so beyond that, it was a wonderful youth.
Mm.
But that was certainly a part that was tough to deal with.
It is. So in high school, you said you loved the whole experience. Were you involved with extracurricular type sports?
I was a cheerleader for a little while. And then I realized that it was really no fun not being able to watch the games because I was a huge sports fan. So I became what they called don't make fun. I still have the jacket. Kenny's Angels.
Okay.
Which was simply,
you have a picture?
I was going to ask if that's one of the pictures.
I have the jacket. It is not. But I would do statistics for all the different sports.
Okay.
So baseball, football, basketball, you just go and you take all the stats. And that was so much more fun than not anything against cheerleading at all. But I just find it a lot more fun to watch the action.
And I mean, speaking of which, we're coming off a huge win Sunday. I know this is going to air in a week or so, but I got to tell you, the bank was rocking yesterday.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It was so great.
So awesome to see them play every team, special teams, offense, defense on the line. We won every part of the game. So much fun to watch.
You want to know, we want to know, why can we not do that every single week? And hopefully they'll put it together where we can start seeing that on a regular basis. But I can't tell you how much I loved it. I mean, I'm a huge fan, have been for so many years, and I just, I sort of lose it a little bit, you know, at those games.
I lose my mind.
We are passionate fans, aren't we? The Jaguars fans, yeah. And the most optimistic fan base in the NFL.
Yes, we
every
we
got, year we is our year.
We have had to be, right? Yeah. But this really is.
I agree.
Last week, I'm sitting on my back porch. TJ's watching the game with me and my daughter, Caroline. Rebecca was working at the hospital. And Caroline just got up and took the dogs for a walk because she couldn't deal with us anymore with that game.
Yeah.
And then it's just a reverse this week where we're just so excited. Mm-hmm. And one thing I love is when it doesn't matter what neighborhood you're from, when you're walking out of the stadium after a win.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It's like it feels like the most unified Jacksonville would ever be.
That's what that's always what I try to explain to people, you know, about sports. You see every walk of life mm-hmm. at that game. You see nobody cares what party anybody is. Right. Nobody cares right. anything about anybody besides that we're all there supporting our yeah. team. And it is awesome. I mean, it's just so awesome. It's sports brings people together.
It
no
galvanizes
question
it. A community.
It does. The Jaguars have been great for that.
I have to think that's why you were so passionate about the stadium renovation and trying to help people understand this will bring our community together, make everything stronger, especially in the downtown area. What was the biggest challenge for you when it came to that whole situation?
The stadium?
Yeah.
I was insistent that we were going to move fast on it because being from Jacksonville and so many generations here and being a reporter who has watched politics mm-hmm. for many years here, right? I've seen things fall apart mm-hmm. when they take too long. I've seen things blow up in price. I've seen things, you know, the things that we need to accomplish, we need to move on. And so we knew what needed to be done. We just needed to move fast. So we set a deadline and my words to the team were, we never started the news at 11:01. You know, we started at 11.
Yeah.
And this is going to be done by this date. Well, we can't do that. I said, yeah, we can. We're going to burn the ships. We're going to stay here till we get it done. And we did. And I was so grateful we got through that mm-hmm. process fast because, you know, what do you think that debate would have become had we had the season we had last year,
wow.
which should have nothing to do with whether or not we put together a stadium deal. It's why I was just so convicted to get it done quickly. And I feel like that about everything right sure. now. If you have a plan and you have a focus, go as fast and as hard as you can toward that. And I think downtown has been a great example of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Mayor, we in season one, we interviewed Mark Lamping. That was one of the things he complimented you on was having that plan and executing it, you know, quickly, just making sure that stuff got done. And we're going to have a beautiful stadium to show for it.
Well, let's be clear. They were great partners in that, mm-hmm. too. They were willing to come in and split things with us, which if you look around the NFL, doesn't happen very often. And we got that great community benefit agreement, hundreds of millions for our community, which was also something that, you know, they don't have to do that. So, right. so I think they've been really good partners to our city. And I get frustrated when people dunk on them a little bit, you know, I think they've been tremendous partners.
Yeah. I mean, they're basically going 50-50 with everything downtown at the stadium.
Invested a great deal of money.
The Four Seasons. Yep. And everybody talked about how that really wasn't going to be a Four Seasons, never going to happen. And now they have to look out there and eat their words every time they see.
Listen, you've been in Jacksonville long enough to know that this is what happens here, right? We've had this inferiority complex for so many years. Why I couldn't honestly tell you, aside from the fact that we sometimes just haven't gotten over the top, right? But maybe that's part of what drives that whole, you know, idea of speed for me. I just this city is so great, mm-hmm. and we've got every natural amenity, and it just makes no sense why people don't. I mean, you can see it. Usually when you're the closest to something, it's hard to see it, right? But we got a great city and people need to start getting fired up about all the great stuff that's happening.
I call it pulling the rope in the same direction.
Yeah.
And there's been a time in Jacksonville's history where we should all be pulling the rope in the same direction, but you just can't seem, people on the other side don't quite see it. And you're just like, please, we've got so much. Stop pulling the rope in the other direction. And I think we've got a lot of momentum now.
I think we have incredible momentum. And I'm just very hopeful we can keep moving at the same pace and get it all done.
So you graduated from BK.
Yep.
And then you became a huge Florida Gator.
Oh, I mean,
FSU. Come here, right?
FSU. Come on.
I just wanted to see the, now, the look just, on your...
You hurt me. You hurt me with that. Now, look, I am thrilled we've got a UF campus coming to downtown. Yeah,
it's a big deal.
But no.
I know you're a big Seminole. Yes. And we have three of them at our house. And we commiserate sometimes.
You're very blessed. You're very blessed to have three Seminoles in your house.
But tell us a little bit about that decision and what it was like in Tallahassee back in the day.
Well, there's a lot of girls there back then. Many more girls than guys, which is why I think my dad felt good about the decision. Right. You know, he had gone to Florida and really, really sort of wanted me to be a Gator. I said, Dad, you know, look at the boy-girl ratio.
Yeah.
Perfect. You know, he's like, all right. but no, it was great. I mean, I got there around the time that Bobby Bowden got there.
Wow.
And so I had an incredible ride while I was in Tallahassee. We started off, you know, not so great, and then ended up just being phenomenal. Now I'm spoiled rotten and I can't stand it when we don't do well. So, you know, sort of reverse with the Jaguars where we just feel like we're, you know, we're always going to get to the next level.
Right.
With FSU, I always feel like, when are we going to get back?
Yeah, it is. Like my oldest went to FSU and I don't think they won any time while she was there. And then when Caroline was at Florida, FSU won. And then now that the boys are there, they're going through the drought again.
Yeah.
And you're just like, man, I want them to realize what it was like when we were in high school and when Florida State was just every year.
Well, let me tell you this, though. My son went to FSU. When he was a kid, he would get so depressed because he was always an FSU fan. He'd get so depressed and cry when they would lose. And I said, buddy, it always comes back around.
Yeah.
We went together to the national championship game in 2013 over in California. And man, it's still forever one of those memories that just seared in my head because we were trailing the whole way, right?
Yeah.
And he's looking at me, he's like, man, should we not have come? I'm like, we're winning. We're going to win.
Yeah.
And great experience to have with my kid. My daughter went to Florida, so we don't speak of her. But
well, they're struggling recently here.
No, she's fantastic. But she's my Gator and he's my Seminole. So I got one of each.
Yeah, we have one Gator and three Seminoles. So
yeah. And I'm a Gator fan and it's been miserable the last few years, but it, like you said, it comes in cycles. They figure it out.
You always love them no matter what, right?
Yep. So do you always want to be a broadcaster?
Yeah. Well, no, I always wanted to be a writer.
Okay.
I wouldn't say I always wanted to be a broadcaster. In fact, I didn't even do broadcasting at Kenny. I was not interested in it at all. And when I was a senior in high school, Deborah Giannoulis came to speak to my class. And I went, okay, I like her. She seems like she's got it going on. She's a journalist. That's how I viewed myself. Really just fell in love with the whole persona. She was wonderful. Ended up being a great mentor for me over the years. I love telling that story because it makes it sound like she's so much older than me, but she's only a few years older. She was just a child when she started here, really. But ended up being a great friend and a great mentor all those years. But that's why I got into broadcasting. Wow.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
And you studied that at FSU?
I did. Okay. I studied communications at FSU. Mm. Yeah, sure did.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, so you graduate from FSU and then you go, okay, I'm going to knock the doors down and I'm going to get this job.
Yeah.
Is that, how did that go?
Well, what happened? Here's the other funny thing about me I would describe myself mostly as an introvert. Mm. I was hideously shy. So getting myself to even go on camera or speak publicly was really hard.
That's shocking to me.
I was going
to
say.
No, seriously,
not natural for me at all.
Wow.
The writing always natural. Very solitary though, right? Not in front of anybody. Mm-hmm. So I started at the station in Tallahassee and did the morning cut-ins, which I pray to God there are no tapes up anywhere. And then just proceeded on from there and just I don't know, you know, it's like everything else, it's time in the chair. You just you get there and you get comfortable and then you move along. And I guess I learned early on that if I could just be my authentic self and not worry so much about being a broadcaster, that I'd be okay. And
it comes across.
I was going to say,
it really worked
out. You can tell when you're watching the news, who's genuine and who's kind of trying to be a persona. But I think just growing up and watching you anchor the, you know, that evening news all the time, you can tell that you're just natural.
I enjoyed it very much.
And how many years were you in?
Well, in total, about 30 years.
Yeah.
24 and a half here. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's insane.
I was just going to say, so obviously not a career politician, but decided that you wanted to run for office and, you know, especially the mayor's office. So what was it that that made you say, I'm going to enter this race? I'm going to kind of put my name and reputation on the line to see if we can, you know, do this.
Well, there were a couple things for me. Honestly, it was the fact that that sort of frustration about things never quite moving fast enough, I think, was part mm-hmm. of it. And with what I had done in my previous life, not only with my broadcasting, but also in the foundation, I felt that I'd been able to make good things happen. Yeah. And I felt good about being able to put relationships together. And then beyond that, frankly, the political climate was the other thing. I felt like things had gotten so horribly hyper partisan. And I felt that was so bad for Jacksonville that I knew that wasn't me. And I knew that I could put my love for the city first and wanted to bring the city together. That was really those things more than anything else. I wanted to finally move the city, and I wanted to make sure that we could get back to a time when people didn't even remember what party their mayor was from. Yeah. Do you remember the mayors? I mean, for the last, yeah. you just don't think about it because everybody was about Jacksonville. And so I felt like we had departed from that. And I really wanted to bring that back.
I was going to say the people may be watching this, if they aren't familiar with the relationship that you and Daniel have, and they just saw the campaign and what was on TV, on the news even, they might feel like that was the case or that could be the case now. But I've known this guy since middle school. I know how much he loves the city of Jacksonville. There's no doubt you love the city of Jacksonville, but people probably think there's no way these two, you know, as much, of a divide as there was during the campaign, there's no way these two could be working together in a cohesive way. Can you tell the people how important this relationship is between you and Daniel?
It's been a great relationship. And I'm really proud of that, by the way. You know, I see people occasionally take shots at that. Yeah. And I think, you know, if you can't be a grown-up and put your city before any sort of mm-hmm. politics, then you can't do the job. And I feel like both of us, I think we both recognized in each other somebody that loved the city. Mm-hmm. And we got together very shortly, I guess, what, 2 or 3 weeks after, the election. And I remember Daniel called me and I said, do you want me to come to you? And he said, no, I think I should come mm-hmm. to you. And I thought, wow, that is, you know, that's gotta be tough because mm-hmm. I know how much you love the city mm-hmm. and I knew you really wanted to win that race. And, he called me the night that I won, was incredibly gracious, said, I'll do anything I can to be helpful. And, we had a fantastic conversation when he came to the office. And, I appreciated the humility. You know, you don't see that very often in politics. And, I think he was a little surprised that I mm-hmm. felt the way I did too. Right.
I wasn't expecting to get a hug when I walked in. I always say it's the most Jacksonville thing ever, where you go, okay, that's over. We both love our city.
Right.
How do we get our city heading yeah. in the right direction?
Absolutely.
And there's people that don't like that.
Yeah.
They don't like the fact that we both see Jacksonville bigger than ourselves.
That's right.
And, you know, I we'll just deal with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and he's been a fantastic partner. Everything he said to me that day, he has delivered on. We have worked tirelessly together just to continue the momentum and to move this city forward. And I think, you know, I consider him a friend, really a good friend. And people can look at that and think whatever they want. I think, unfortunately, you know, you have some people that look at those sorts of things as weakness, and I look at them as the ultimate strength.
Yeah,
I really do. I think if you cannot, as I said, put aside any sort of personal hurt, politics, anything for your city, then I don't know how you're going to do the job. I felt very strongly, and I still do, that you cannot split the baby and care about the baby. Yeah. I always think about that. That story from Solomon, the King yeah. Solomon, yeah. the Bible, that the you know, mm-hmm. who's the mom? You know, who's yeah. the one that wouldn't split the baby?
Yeah. Right.
You know, and I think that you cannot, I don't think you can lead if you can't see that love is really the way you got to go. Love yeah. for the city.
You know, when you're saying that, it number one, Mayor, means the world to me that you would say that, and I feel the same way. So I'm putting Jacksonville first. And I can tell you at the end of our days in Jacksonville, I think people are going to look back at the service that you've given, what I've done at the chamber as changing people's lives. And while you were just sitting there, I was thinking about my experience the night of the election, when I basically got out of the vehicle and it was already called, race was called. Mm. And you know, we put some, both of us put so much into it. And the, you know, my family, we were devastated in defeat. I'm at this point, I can talk about it because I feel like I've recovered from all of that. What was your feeling when you worked so hard to win this race and you were on the other side?
Well, first of all, I expected not to hear anything for hours. So I had gone into the bathroom and I was just, you know, doing my makeup and, you know, I would had taken a hotel room down there, close to where we were having our watch party. And I hear a scream come from the other room and they're saying they've called the race. I'm like, no way. And I remember thinking, this isn't real.
Yeah.
It felt so surreal to me. It took me a while to get my brain around it, but it was a wonderful night for me because my kids were there, you know, my husband was there and there were so many hopes and dreams, I think of so many people, that had worked so hard that I could see in their faces. There were tears.
Yeah.
It was honestly for me, it was a beautiful night. Yeah. But I gotta tell you, you know, it was hard to take your call. Mm. I'm sure harder for you, but it's hard to talk to somebody that's clearly in pain, you know, and I hated that for you, honestly. But I really did. It was a great night.
A
great night.
Mayor, both of you are passionate about Jacksonville, strong leaders. I wonder if I could just ask you, and I want to ask you the same so you can get a head start, but what is something that you really admire about Daniel?
I think he loves the city. I mean, I admire that. I admire the fact that he works so hard every day to make sure that our city reaches its full potential. I mean, I think that's, you know, but beyond that, he's got a wonderful family. You know, his wife is lovely. And I've enjoyed getting to know him. You know, he's a great partner to have in this effort. So.
I love that you are fearless and relentless when you see a goal. And it makes me think about you getting up every morning before the sun comes up and you hit the running trail.
Yeah.
One thing that I was envious of is how well you did in front of camera. Because of the years of experience you had, it's a natural thing. And I felt like you were speaking straight to the people of Jacksonville, which was incredibly effective. But I love the tenacity. And I think
a lot of that probably comes from my dad, but also because he was certainly a tenacious person. But I also think it probably comes from the cancer experience. Mm. You know, having faced cancer 3 times, there's really not a lot that scares you. Mm. It's like, it's not cancer. Mm. You know, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? And I think that is part of it. You know, and I think we had this conversation. I wanted it, but I didn't need it. And I think that's really where my brain was in terms of the race. But I think I get up every day going, I want this to be, you know, this extraordinary day with extraordinary things that happen. And I have no problem focusing myself on the present because at one time I didn't think none of us has any more than the present, right? But at one time I truly thought that I wasn't going to have much time. And so I find it easy to sort of focus in on where I am and really love that moment. And that's why I get out every day and see the sunrise and run. And it also helps me to stay a little bit with all the political nonsense that can go on in a city.
So on that though, you mentioned the cancer diagnosis. Yeah. Can you describe when the doctor told you, that you had cancer and what was going through your mind and what the family was thinking and how you responded?
You know, I'm going to be honest with you. The very first diagnosis, they said small, treatable, you know, and I thought, okay, I'm going to slam dunk this and go on with my life. And, you know, same old type A, let's go. Didn't really, you know, give it much thought. 2 years later, diagnosed again, deep lymph node, metastatic. Scared me. Mm. That's when I started the foundation. But honestly, I think for me, whether it was the first diagnosis, second or third, where the cancer had gone to my lung and they had to actually go in and remove a piece of my lung. I think that was when I was the most scared. Yeah. As a runner, I didn't want to give up being able to run. But also, you know, as a wife, as a mother, I remember leaving the Mayo Clinic just feeling like I was sort of stepping through liquid. It was 5 years cancer free and I'd gone in for my all clubs ready to fight that I didn't need to go do tests anymore. Yeah. And I was stunned. But I mean, I remember just feeling like, okay, Lord, I get it. I got to stop trying to control this situation. Right. I promise you, I will be present in my life. I remember going to see a doctor who was, you know, an oncologist, but also a complementary medicine doctor, in addition to my oncologist at Mayo. And she said, you know, what are you so afraid of? And I said, well, I'm afraid I'm going to die. And she said, well, okay, we're all going to die. What are you going to do about living? And so she gave me some steps to sort of reframe my thoughts to where basically I'm just getting up and I'm happy to be in that day. Mm. And I mean, that's a very condensed version of telling you what, and Tim and I were both in this process of going through all this and doing, we did the same things. We read the same books. We did the same steps. We did all the same. And I think, you know, the kids were just sort of used to that, you know, ebb and flow of all of it by that point. I'm sure there was some, we just tried to keep as much of it from them as we could. But honestly, I feel like it's been a gift for me more than anything else, because I mean, what more could I ask from my life, regardless of whatever happens to me from here on out? I mean, I've had the most remarkable life I have. And so it's like, what can I do? It feels like I have, maybe it's another speed thing. It just feels like I have borrowed time. So I'm going to go as far and as fast as I can to try to make sure that I can make as much of a difference as I can while I'm here. And, you know, hopefully that's a long time, you know, but it's been a great perspective shifter for me. It really has.
I was going to say, that's such great perspective for all of our listeners. I've heard the phrase that the toughest thing we've been through is the toughest thing that we've been through. So for some people, it's something like you with a cancer diagnosis, fighting it, beating it. But what would you say to somebody who is maybe for the first time in their lives experiencing something that has kind of turned their world upside down? Would it be to be present, or what would you tell them?
Well, the first thing I would tell them is don't beat yourself up. Feel the feels, you know, let yourself feel it, because you can't. It's like stages of grief. You can't race through them. You can't. You have to feel that sort of grief for the life that you're losing.
Yeah.
And when I say that, I don't mean the physical life. I mean, it's going to change. And you have to get yourself framed to that. But then I would say, put things into your mind and your body that make you able to be present. And don't look over your shoulder, whatever you do, because that's gone. That's not here. Be where you are. And I think that for me is the work every day. I get up, you've heard me say this. I do a gratitude list every day just to remind myself of all the things that I have to be grateful for. And by the time I get to the end of that list, whatever nonsense has happened at City Hall is completely, you know, gone. And by the time I finish my morning run, I'm just, you know,
you're good.
I'm just in a great place. It probably irritates the heck out of some people that I'm so happy, but I really feel, for people going through anything like this, it's life-changing, but what I will tell them is it can change your life in the most miraculous ways if you let it. And I know that's probably easy for me to say as somebody who's sitting here after almost 20 years, but it's, that was not given and guaranteed to me, and I don't know what tomorrow brings, right?
True.
But I do think it's the way to happiness and the way to be most effective in your life.
I totally agree. And I feel like there are so many people, you are willing to step into the arena of politics. And there are so many people that all they like to do is stand on the outside and throw, you know, stones.
There's plenty of those.
Yeah. And it's like that perspective, I didn't put the two and two together that you're like, hold on a second. I'm on bonus time. If I step in the arena and whatever happens,
right.
It's like, that's like the best place to be.
It really is. It really is. I think you have to want it. You can't need it. If you need it too much, then you end up taking yourself in places that aren't you.
Yeah.
And that's not what you want.
Do you feel like that helped you maybe enjoy the process of campaigning? That can be so stressful.
No, I loved it. I loved every minute of it. I really did. And I still love the town hall meetings more than anything, even when I'm getting yelled at. I mean, I just do. I love that connection with humans. And I just think it's the best, because if you can build, if you can just start to build that relationship or trust with people. Somebody said several months ago, success moves at the speed of trust. And I really think it's true. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to build that trust. And I feel like that is the most important thing that I do, is being with people and listening to whatever their grievances or ideas or whatever it is, you know. But I do love it. I love the campaigning, and I love the town halls. Mm-hmm. Seems counterintuitive probably, but I don't like sitting in that office. Yeah. I like to be out.
I mean, there are some candidates that I've seen over the years can't stand knocking on doors. I loved that part.
Yeah. No,
meeting
great.
Somebody new. Right. I met somebody new every 10 minutes.
It's great, it right?
That was.
And most people are nice.
Yeah.
You know, not everybody.
Not everybody.
Most people are nice.
So what's the biggest surprise at City Hall? Like, as coming in, I'd been at City Hall before, so I kind of knew what some of the shenanigans were, but what were the biggest takeaways from like that you've seen since you've been there last couple of years?
Gosh, I don't know if anything has surprised me. Because remember, I was exposed to a lot of politics as a reporter. Yeah, I've seen a lot
true.
Of stuff.
Yeah.
I think I've been disappointed at some points by the tendency to put one's own political aspirations in front of whatever, you know, whatever is best for the city. That's depressing to me. But I think, you know, I always think that given enough time, people can learn the right lessons if they'll allow themselves to. And I think there are folks over there that really are doing that, and folks that really want to do the right stuff. I think sometimes people can listen to the wrong people. And I think you know, hopefully that gets figured out. But I try to give everybody as much grace as possible. I don't have space in my life for resentment or any sort of grudges. I just don't have space for it. So I think sometimes they have a hard time believing that I really want the best for them too. But I do. I want the best for the city, and the only way we have the best for the city is for everybody to do good. You know, and so we just got to get the politics out of it. It shouldn't matter. What should matter is we love Jacksonville.
Yeah, I was on the Civic Council podcast a while back, and one of the questions they talked about were how we work together to bring jobs to Jacksonville. And one of the takeaways was, listen, in Tallahassee, in DC, it's a partisan game. You're going to have a caucus that's Republican or Democrat. And that's just the way that world's not changing. That's the way it's going to be from here on out. And I said, but there's no fire station that's Democrat, Republican. It's just, are we keeping our citizens safe?
We shouldn't bring that home.
Are the roads
bring that politics home? Yeah.
Proper. Do we have a good economy? And that's just not a DNR thing.
It's not.
You know,
and it's so, not. You know, another former mayor once said that we don't have Democratic or Republican potholes.
Yeah.
That was my cousin Tommy, by the way. And that's true. Yeah. And that's basically what we deal with here. Find out what is the basic need. And fix it. But you know what is interesting? You say it's never going to change, and maybe it won't. I'm the eternal optimist, right? I do think what you're starting to hear more is people understanding, even on that different plane, that if you can't talk to people where they live, affordability, quality of life, they're not going to keep you there very long. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't care what party you are. People can be loyal to a party if they want to, but at the end of the day, if I can't eat, if I can't put food, if I can't get a job, they're going to look for somebody that's going to actually care about that need. And I think that I'm hopeful that we are seeing some of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can get a job in Jacksonville, that's for sure. And looks like the next 5 years are going to be, in my opinion, with what you're doing and with what Andre's doing, there's going to be plenty of jobs coming here where we can put food on the table for families.
It's a great time. It's a great time in Jacksonville. We just got to keep it going.
Yeah.
So to your point, one of the things I've seen, Mayor, since I've been at the chamber, which coming up on about 5 years now that I've worked there, and just being around all the different business leaders that represent industries and, you know, different sectors in the city, is a collaboration that you don't necessarily see in other places. And we have heard that from guest after guest, no matter what their political affiliation is, they seem to set aside their own. Now everybody wants to make a good living and wants their business to be successful, but for the good of the city,
yep,
are willing to kind of set aside grudges or some of the things that, you know, you would think would cause tension between business leaders to work for the betterment of the city. Have you seen that?
Oh my gosh, yes. I love our business community. I think they're just doing so much. I mean, all the public-private partnerships have been tremendous, and we're just continuing to build all those. I mean, you could tell when we have that annual, I love that trip to London, yeah. Although it's just crazy hard with all the stuff that you have to mm-hmm. do all week long. It is such a great example mm-hmm. of the love for the city coming together, where business leaders are working together with, you know, with me and others to make sure that we are bringing more business to Jacksonville. And it's great to be able to tell the Jacksonville story, but I think our business community is dialed in.
Mm-hmm. Literally competitors who compete every day are sitting in a room trying to convince people from London to make Jacksonville the beachhead yeah. when they come to the States, yeah. which is so cool.
No, it is.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Yeah. And I see them bragging on each other. You know, obviously there's a competitiveness and people want to be, again, want their business to be successful,
yeah.
but the collaboration is second to none
it
from
is.
What I've experienced.
Well, I think they all recognize where we are yeah. and they realize if, to your point, if we're all pulling that mm-hmm. rope in the same direction, it benefits all of us,
yeah.
right? And I think that's what you're seeing. You're seeing everybody going, okay, we are about to make it yeah. over the top here.
Yeah.
Let's go.
It really you know? Is.
Yeah.
So we talked a little bit about the foundation and you've got this race that is probably started out as a small one. I don't remember the beginnings of it.
It did not start out as a
small one. Oh, was it big from the beginning?
We had over 7,000 people.
Oh, wow.
The first year we ever had that race. It was a God thing, I'm telling you. I mean, it was like, it was the most amazing thing. And it's just continued.
It's only grown
every year.
That is.
And so you're passionate about running. You mentioned you're a runner.
Yep.
What does that look like for you? How many miles are you putting in a day or a week, or how do you track that?
I have actually increased my mileage since I've been at City Hall, but I get up between 4 and 4:30 usually most days. And Tim will go out and run with me so that I'm not running by myself in the dark. Right. But usually somewhere between 6 and 8 miles a day is what we end up with. And that's every day of the week for me. It keeps me sane. It grounds me. But it also keeps me ready to run just about any race I might want to run, which is great, but it really is incredibly helpful.
Well, that's where I was going next. What are some of your favorite memories or races that you've run over the years? What was the most challenging one or, you know,
most challenging one. In fact, I'll show you another picture.
Okay.
Most challenging one was the inaugural year of the marathon, 2008. I was in the middle of cancer treatment. Oh. I had just been diagnosed. Remember when we started planning the race, yeah. it was 2006. I was thinking I'm all good, right?
Yeah.
We get to 2007. I get diagnosed a few months before the inaugural marathon.
Mm.
Got to get the piece of the lung cut out. Got to do the whole 9 yards. And I'm like, I'm running this dadgum marathon. You talk about being stubborn. I mean, I was not missing that marathon.
Right.
I was thinking I might be able to run half and my team would run the other half. And I got out there and just felt like I was running on air. I mean, literally, I'm in the middle of chemo. I'm on a drug that's making my hands and feet peel. Okay. And I never felt my feet touch the ground.
Wow.
So this is me crossing the finish line of our inaugural marathon. It took me months to recover from that. I look really happy there, but I did pretty much collapse when I was done. I'm not recommending that, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm just saying for me, it was a joyful experience.
That has to be the most memorable.
But and the toughest. It was probably the toughest marathon that I've ever run. Although I did run Boston with a cracked hip, so I guess that was sort of no fun. That was a tough race too. We've run a lot of marathons. We travel and we run marathons together. That's what Tim and I do. This is the Madrid Marathon.
Oh, that's cool.
But we've done a lot of overseas marathons. Because we like to pick a place we want to travel
yeah.
and then find out when their marathon is and go
such
run.
Such a good idea.
It's great. It's just, I'm glad we both enjoy it. Because
yeah.
if you had just one partner that wanted to do that all the
yeah.
time, it'd probably be annoying.
Yes.
But we both really enjoy
I'm
it.
I'm just a human that wasn't built to run.
No.
I think you're kind of
too,
the same
yeah,
human.
A little bit too big to be pounding the pavement for yeah. mile after mile.
And I do work out at the gym a couple times a week. I work out actually with James Stewart, who's
yeah.
the former Jaguars running back,
yeah.
has a place out in Atlantic Beach. And he beats me up a couple of days a week just to make
do
sure
you
that I stay
heavy
strong.
Heavy weights or?
Not heavy.
More,
yeah. I mean, it's heavier than I'm comfortable with some
yeah.
days, but not by anybody's standard
yeah.
would they be heavy.
Well, I mean kind of like the heavy resistance training,
yes.
which I think is super important.
I do too.
Especially ladies, to make sure they have strong bones. And,
yep.
you know, I know that we're working in the 50s trying to make sure that we're strong when we're 80.
Yes.
And
I'm somewhere in between those two things.
We won't ask where, but yeah. You look young for your age.
Yes, so that's very yeah. kind of you. I'm sure I do not anymore. It's funny when you were asking me to look for pictures, I'm like, dang, this office has aged me.
So back to the running. I hear there's this thing that exists that's called a runner's high.
Oh, it's 100%
Have
true.
You experienced
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely.
And how
endorphins, baby, all day long.
How,
that's what keeps
how
you going.
Long or how far do you have to run before you hit that? Because I don't know that I've ever experienced that before.
You know, that's why I'm not a big fan of five. I'll do a 5K, but it's an anaerobic experience. Mm-hmm. You're just running so hard and so fast that you don't ever get a chance to do anything but try to breathe.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I like it. You know, if you can run a good 10K after you get, for me, I mean, this probably has to do with age too. Yeah. I have to run probably a mile or two before I really start to feel good. Mm-hmm. And then once I get into that groove,
just floating.
Now, and when you run a marathon, I would say that, you know, a lot of that comes in your later miles. You gotta cross through a plane of where you're just falling apart, usually around mile 18 or 20. And if you can get yourself through that plane, that pain point, where your body really wants to fall apart, I'm telling you, it's just pure euphoria.
And I've heard
people, best drug in the world.
I was talking to Rebecca, your wife, that she ran that marathon, and she said that she ran it with a group of friends, and each of them had a different emotional experience whenever they got to that brink. Like, she was just mad. She was mad because she was, you know, on that verge, and then some of her friends were crying. And what is your emotional
I'm almost always in tears.
Okay.
But mostly for me, it's because I'm, you know, I'm looking around and in my race, I talk to people. I'm not trying to set any land speed records in my race. I want to see who's there.
Right.
And I'm passing these young survivors and people that it means everything in the world to them that they're getting their body to do this. And it brings me back. Right. And so for me, crossing that finish line, and then I stand there till the end, till the last runners have crossed to watch everybody else cross. And the stories, I'm in tears for hours. It's right. just the best type of tears though. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so great watching people accomplish something they never thought they could do, especially people that are going through something so tough like cancer. And it's not all cancer survivors, obviously, but it certainly brings you a different perspective. You can see why people get addicted.
Wow.
Because it's just, you know.
I don't think that's going to happen for me.
So a couple of last questions. We're coming up on time. And I remember us having a conversation of some of the cool people that you had a chance to interview when you were an anchor person and a reporter. Do any of them pop out, like famous people that you had the chance to either welcome to Jacksonville with a conversation?
You know, it's funny. And it's probably why I don't, I've never really... I know a lot of people freak out over meeting politicians, you know, but I never really have because I've interviewed so many of them. But I would say having the opportunity to do a one-on-one interview with President Obama was pretty special. We were in the middle of the military sequester, and it's funny because I was getting ready to retire, and we were flying over Washington D.C. coming back from a race in Maine, And I said to Tim, I turned to Tim and I go, you know, what makes me sad is I've interviewed all these different politicians. I've never interviewed a sitting president. I guess I never will be able to. Mm-hmm. So we land, I get a phone call from the station. Hey, we have an opportunity for you. I mean, I know, right? I said, magical life, right?
Wow.
So would you like to do a one-on-one with President Obama about the military sequester? I said, I would love to do that. So I flew to DC, was able to sit down with him for about 20 minutes and do that interview. But it was one of those things where I thought, you know, how many people have the opportunity to do a one-on-one with a sitting president? It was a great way to end my career. It was one of the last interviews I ever did while I was there. It's like, okay, exclamation point, done. So that was probably one of my most memorable. But truly, for me, a lot of times it was just, you know, the everyday people that you go out and you interview who are doing, you know, whatever's going on in their life. You know, kids can be really emotional. You know, people in neighborhoods that are going through stuff. I mean, there are so many times when this job has reminded me of those interviews, you know, where you go out and really all people want you to do is listen.
Yeah.
And that's a magical thing to be able to just give somebody that gift, you know? Anyway, I loved all of it, but, that was probably my most memorable.
So you think about all the cool jobs. I mean, you've had a lot of cool jobs.
I've reinvented myself a few times.
I know.
Yeah.
And now you have the coolest job in Jacksonville. We talk about it all the time, about our job is to bring more jobs here.
Right.
And we think about growing up, we didn't have very cool jobs like we do now. We had some tough ones. Do you have one that pops out as you were growing up that was
your tough job? Well, you know, we're sitting in it. I mean, you know, we're sitting here in the Desert Rider, which has been here since the late 70s. That would be when I was about a sophomore in high school.
All right.
So he had another location outside of this one that was over on University Boulevard near JU. And I was one of the servers there. Wow. So I probably frankly ate more than I served. They used to sell shish kebab back then.
Okay.
And man, I would shovel that shish kebab in as much as I could possibly eat. But that was a great job. You know, because I knew I wasn't going to get fired.
All right,
you couldn't get fired. And so I could eat all the food I wanted. Yeah. But even then, I really just, oddly enough, being the introvert that I am, I really always enjoyed talking to people. You know, that would come into the store. Yeah. So that was a fun job. Mm. It's a fun job.
Well, we've learned so much about you, some of it that we already knew.
I'm so happy Uncle Larry didn't chime in on that. Yeah. She was useless in that job.
I know we have just a few minutes left. Are there any other pictures that you wanted to share that you brought?
Let me see what I brought. I didn't really know what to bring. So there's the one you saw from the race. Yeah. This is the Madrid Marathon. Oops, let's see. Oh, this is a picture of me and my photographer, Jeff Imperial. When we were ending the Gulf War, they flew us out to the Saratoga. Wow, to come in with the ship. And so we were reporting on them coming back in through the jetties and everything. It was a great, and Whitney Houston, we flew out on one of those, what do they call them? Was a C8 or C9, something like, you know, where you have to sit backwards in this plane and you have to land backwards. She comes floating in on her helicopter and did a concert for the trip. So it was a very memorable trip, but that was one of my most memorable stories that I covered. That's me and my dad when he was in law school. He was graduating from law school when I was just a baby. I just thought you might want to see my dad. Yeah. This is something that my husband does all the time. Okay, so if we're on different, if we're running in different, like he's coming back and I'm going out, we'll fly toward each other, right? I know that sounds silly, but he did this morning and it made me think of this picture. He'll just start flapping his arms, you know, like I'm coming. But he's a great inspiration to me and a fun running partner. And I think the rest of these,
he's a great guy.
And that's just the fam. They go and run races with me, which I very much appreciate. My daughter Danielle and my son Drew, and of course the weatherman. Yeah. So yeah.
What a great family.
Yeah, it's a good life. I mean,
you have lived it to its fullest, and I hope that you have many, many, many more years doing the exact same thing. And I would tell you, we're close on time, and it's hard to believe it went by this quick. But I love the fact that you're willing to sit down with us, and I hope the citizens of Jacksonville will get something out of this conversation.
So fun to
kind of know who you are now.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so great much for your time.
And now I can eat my food.
Yes.
I'm really excited about it.
Thanks for these cookies. Thanks for coming on Speakeasy, Mayor. Appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to Speakeasy Jacks. If you enjoyed the conversation, follow us on our social media platforms, share it with a friend, and make sure you like and subscribe so you never miss an episode.